My name is Keith, and I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA. And since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons, Chris and Anita, have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Paige will read the preamble.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Paige.
Hi, Paige.
And this is the preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Please join in the serenity prayer. God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Chris will now read the steps.
Hi, I'm Chris. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Chris.
One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Terry will now read the traditions.
Hi, my name's Terry and I'm an alcoholic. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based upon attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers, followed by our information break, and then our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Tammy.
Hi, my name is Tammy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tammy.
I am shaking so much right now. It's interesting. I've been up in front of this microphone quite a bit over the years. And this is the first time that I've actually had to speak at a Tuesday night meeting. Maybe that's because it's a little different this time. So a little bit about me. First of all, I have no idea what I'm going to say. I had a dream the other night that I was following a good friend of mine speaking, but I wasn't speaking from the podium. For some reason, I was speaking over from the wings while playing chess. So who knows what that means? I don't even know how to play chess, and I'm sure there's probably someone that is analyzing my dream as we speak. I am also one to analyze dreams, and I seem to think that I'm a psychotherapist and a doctor and a relationship expert and all of the above. That tends to be the nature of my disease, that we tend to think that we're experts in a lot of things. But I think primarily the reason why I'm so nervous is it's really hard for me to open up, to have anybody get close to me and to expose myself. There was this book that I used to read when I was a little girl, and I loved it. And it was about, a little Muppet character. And he was talking about how there was a monster at the end of the book. And don't turn the page, because if you turn the page, you're going to get closer to the monster. And so you turn the page, and he would be like, don't turn the page, and putting up the bricks and the ropes and trying to keep you from getting to the next page. And that's my life. I'm putting up the bricks and tying the pages and closing myself off to you, because at the end of the book, the monster was him. And he was like, you know, it's me. It's sweet, cuddly, lovable me. And just getting to that point is terrifying. And so that's pretty much why I drank. I drank because I could warm up to you. I could be open. I could be your friend. I felt comfortable. I guess I felt like myself when I drank, whatever that may mean. And it's interesting because my personality, I'm pretty much a goofball. I like to joke around with my friends. But as soon as I get a microphone in front of me, I'm very serious. And I want all of you to pay attention to what I'm saying. But the reality of it all, it really just doesn't matter. I just need to be me and who I am as I'm an alcoholic sharing my experience with all of you. So what happened? I am just coming back from a relapse. I was a member of this group for close to 4 years. I relapsed right before my 4-year anniversary. And why is that? You know what? I don't know why that is. I have a pretty good idea. So to the newcomer out there, welcome. I remember my first go around. It was a wonderful experience. In the beginning, and I will tell you that, in the beginning, because it does get tough. And that's not an ominous warning. It's just that sometimes we're dealt things in life that are hard to manage, and I gave up, and you don't have to. But anyway, so I was involved in this group. I had commitments. I had sponsees. I was trying to do everything the way I thought that I was supposed to do it. And I didn't feel like I was getting the results that you all got. So that is another one of the aspects of me, is the fact that I look at all of you and you look so happy and it seems like your lives are all falling together. And that wasn't what my experience was. It's, you know, things were getting difficult. I was beginning to question whether or not I was an alcoholic, because that's what we do. You know, I would go over, I've been through the steps a few times, but I would go over the reading with my sponsor, and there's that part in the big book that talks about the different types of drinkers, the moderate drinker, the heavy drinker, and I'm trying to convince myself that I'm the moderate drinker, or even the heavy drinker, but I'm not an alcoholic, and I don't think that that line of thinking really falls into people, thank you, people that don't suffer from this disease. They don't need to try and convince themselves that maybe they don't have a drinking problem. But that's what I did here. I tried to convince myself that I was different than all of you, and I couldn't identify. And part of that is the fact that I don't know if I ever truly believed that I was an alcoholic when I came in initially. I came in and I was surrounded by the fellowship, and I had really close friends, and I still do. They stood by my side and welcomed me back with open arms. But I thought I had a problem with other substances, and that can be a very, very tricky situation. But alcohol always led to where I was. So I fought that, because I didn't want to be an alcoholic. I felt that I was marked. I felt that there was something wrong with me. I felt that society would shun me, that I would never be able to be in any sort of intimate relationship because nobody would want to be with me because I'm an alcoholic. And that's just all insanity, because quite frankly, who's going to want to be with, you know, the drunk at the bar outside making cigarette friends, smoking the cigarettes, you know, because that's really hot. I don't want to be going into my 40s hanging out with 20-something-year-olds pretending that, you know, I'm something that I'm not. And that tended to be the nature of what had happened after I relapsed, because I just always want to be something that, except me, except the little furry monster at the end of the book. And I can be a monster, that's true. But I think I even legally registered at one point. This is before the first time I came in, to change my name, because I felt if I had a different name, I would be a different person. So I was constantly reinventing myself. But what had happened is, the night of my relapse, I had called my sponsor and I had let her know how hard this had been for me. And I just didn't know what to do. And I just didn't think there was any hope. And she's like, you know, just get through your day, give me a call later. And it's interesting because right, probably a half hour after I had relapsed, she'd sent me a message just to check in to see if I was okay. She knew. She knew exactly what was going on. And the next day I called her right away. I let her know what happened. I called my friends. And I went to a meeting right away, but I wasn't finished. And I knew I wasn't. I didn't want to let any of you know that, but eventually I just said, listen, it's just, you know, I'm not coming back. And I really, really felt that. I felt that there was no way I'm coming back here and standing up and raising my hand. Because I'm not one of you. But interestingly enough, it got to a point where I felt so alone, and I couldn't believe that I had gotten myself back into the same exact situation as I had been in before I came in the first time. But it was worse, because I didn't feel like I belonged here, because I didn't feel like I could identify, and I certainly didn't feel like I belonged out there. And I just, literally, I wanted to die. I didn't know how I was going to carry on, and that was a week before I came back. So I have no idea what made me decide to pick up the phone when I did to come back. But what I will tell you is that, you know, my struggle with believing in something outside of me that has guided my life has been restored, because since I've come back, have things been tough? Absolutely. Have I questioned whether or not I'm an alcoholic? Absolutely. That's what we do. But the bottom line, I'm here, and it works. And I do have a quick, very short story before we sum up, talking about higher power. When I was struggling with an issue, and I was just totally perplexed, and I said, you know, what is it that I'm supposed to do? And I went over to a girlfriend's house, and her son was playing with Legos. And then I was watching television, and I saw a commercial for Legos. And then I went over to another friend's house, and the whole house was filled with Legos. And this was within 3 days, and I was at dinner with a friend, and I'm like, what do all these Legos mean? I just don't understand. And then I said, I got it. I'm supposed to just let go. So, take care.
Thank you. Our second 10-minute speaker is James.
Hi, my name is James. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date's December 18th, 2011. The Atlantic Group is my home group. My sponsor is Adam D., and I'm working in steps 9 through 12. Right before I got here, I spoke to my mom, and I'll roller coaster ride backwards later on, but the last words she said, the phone conversation was, you know, are you nervous tonight? And I said, yes, I am. And she said, James, when there's fear, there's no faith. And I immediately said, Mom, I needed that. Thank you. You know, those words coming out of her mouth really helped me. I want to thank my family. They're not here tonight, but they've been with me all along. My sponsor, Adam, and all my friends in and out of these rooms. Growing up, I'm from a family that is very loving. I have one brother, mom and dad. My dad left the house when I was 9 months old to go to rehab. My father's to this day is 25 years sober. And so I was without him for the first 2 years of my life. And my mom said that you know, as a very loving child, and whenever, you know, she was having a bad day, I was always there for her. And, you know, I had a close relationship with my mom. And growing up in my childhood, I was always, I was a good kid. I would do well in school. And then, you know, I broke down. About 12, 13 years old, things changed. I became a very quiet, silent person, manipulative. My mom used to let me take off Tuesdays to take me to IHOP to talk to her. But she would just cry because I'd said, Mom, I'm not talking. There's nothing to say. I then remember taking my first drink when I was 12 years old. I was down the Jersey Shore. It was a Mike's Hard Lemonade. And the first consequence kicked in right away. A cop car pulled up. I immediately took the Mike's Hard Lemonade and put it in my cargo short pocket and said, the officer asked me, what is in your pocket? I said, nothing. Then I, meanwhile, told him, you know, it's a lemonade. And he said, let me see. And obviously it had alcohol in it. And I said, oh, I didn't know that. But I then was taken back to the house that I was staying at, and it was my friend's parents' house. And, you know, I lied my way out of it, and the parents covered my back. And then, you know, there was no consequence. So then I kept drinking, you know, and ever since then, my mom said, you know, you changed. I didn't open up. I was a very edgy person. you know, anger problems started to kick in. You know, my mom said that I didn't really need much attention. My older brother needed the attention. And I was a good kid. I did well in school. Throughout high school, I really didn't pick up drinks that I didn't pick up the drink that much. I then went off to college in New Jersey and tried to play soccer at a Division I school, and I decided to take up alcohol instead, and I joined a fraternity, and I stopped showing up for soccer practice. I lost my scholarship, and just as Bill describes in his story, the alcoholic that I am, I nearly failed my law class. My GPA was, you know, below the scholarship limit, and I lost it, and my parents obviously were upset with me, but, you know, I hate to say this, but I was in pain. I didn't really care. It's an awful thought to have, but I then got everything back together, continued my drinking, and luckily got my scholarship back. I got into a relationship with a girl, and, you know, in a way, I was still drinking, but she was kind of my higher power for a little while where, you know, I didn't really have the serious drinking going on. It was kind of the occasional drinking, but the obsession was there. Every single time I went on vacation, it was, all right, where's the bar? When was happy hour? What type of beer did they have? And is the fridge stocked? And that was my everyday thought of when I went on vacation. After graduation, I moved right into the city with this girl. Studio apartment, very small, and I continued my drinking. I got a very good job out of school, and I was very happy with that, and I let it get to my head, and I decided to start drinking nearly every day after work. Drinking, luckily, never impacted my work habits. I was always on time. The occasional come in a little late, but didn't really impact my daily workload. I switched roles and got a position at my firm where, you know, I'm starting to be more active and actually take on much more responsibility, so I let that get to my head. I then you know, left work every single day and started drinking. Everything really came to a conclusion where I blamed everyone else. I then moved out of my apartment with this girl and didn't even tell her really why. I said, it's your fault. I need to leave. It was my geographic change from the West Village to Murray Hill, where I'm moving shortly. But I then lived alone and continued my drinking. And started actually a different relationship where I was blacking out probably 3 to 5 times a week. There was verbal, mental, physical abuse, and it was awful. I was not faithful, and I regret that. But that didn't change even when I got sober on December 18th. I took my last drink out of a coffee mug because I was hiding it from my parents, and they had no idea. I then broke down the next morning. God came into my life and said, "You need to do something about this." I went to my first meeting with my father. I went to my 7th meeting on Christmas Day, and I saw my best friend sitting across the room, and he introduced me to the Atlantic Group. I came to the Atlantic Group on the December anniversary of 2011, and I was scared. So scared that I didn't talk to anyone. I got here a few minutes late, and I left a few minutes early, I think. Picked up a sponsor right away. Adam, you know, came up to me after during a Thursday night meeting, and I was excited. I was like, wow, I met my best friend. You know, let's start this. But, you know, it really didn't change much. You know, I started to develop a higher power that was the New York Rangers, and it wasn't going to keep me sober because I knew the season was going to end, and it did. And my sponsor, you know, told me your higher power can't die. You know, you need to build a close relationship with a higher power. So I did. It was not easy. To this day, now, I don't struggle with that anymore. I pray. I have a higher power, and that is God. I've started working the steps. You know, I used to never fellowship. My good friend told me that I never used to fellowship, and you know, it only started probably in October, and my anniversary was in December. So think about that. Like, you should definitely go afterwards and fellowship. But You know, I started working the steps, I started making amends, but to be honest with you, my sober actions only kicked in after I started working these steps. I was still cheating, lying, stealing until I did my fifth step. And it's unbelievable what these steps and what these promises do. I mean, I never thought that I'd be able to help another person. My sponsor was hounding me to get a sponsee. You need to get a sponsee. And I was trying. My trying was, you know, not really trying. But then, you know, something happened where, you know, I started actually, you know, reaching out, and I started praying about it and asking God to, you know, if I'm ready to be a sponsor. And, you know, I got a sponsee, Ryan, who's here, and, you know, we're starting to work the steps. This program has changed my life, and it has changed to what I believe my friends and family around me. It's changed their lives, because I wouldn't be standing here today if it wasn't for this program. And I brought my big book up here, not only to say to the newcomer to get one of these, get a big book. I was so scared and too scared to get one of these that I bought it at Barnes & Noble. I told everyone last at anniversary night that I bought this at Barnes & Noble. I was too scared to go up to that table, so I paid $16.95. It's $8. But to finish this, I just want to read a portion here quickly on page 152. We have shown how we got out from under. You say, yes, I'm willing, but am I to be consigned to a life where I shall be stupid, boring, and glum, like some righteous people I see? I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I? Have you a sufficient substitute? Yes, there is a substitute, and it's vastly more than that, is the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. Thank you.